Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to United R, your one-stop shop for all things Manchester United. I'm your host this week, Colin.
And I'm Imran.
How's it going, Imran?
Not too bad, all things considered.
Not too bad.
We have we have this problem at the moment where United are the first thing of the weekend, and it can really ruin your weekend. But what you've got to do, now that I'm in my old age, I say old age, I'm like 36, but when I was a kid, it used to literally ruin everything. When it was a disappointing result, but now I just kind of like block it off entirely after a few hours.
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because the first question I had scribbled down here was just for you and the listeners to do a bit of a mental health check-in, because I've certainly been contemplating how much I let Manchester United negatively affect not only my life, but the life of the loved ones and any other unfortunate human being who has to be around me recently. So I was just going to ask you, how are you feeling generally and emotionally about Manchester United, and how much does it affect you, on the day, then a few days later? Because it's interesting, I think, as you say, there's something to grow and learn, realizing it's actually all a bit silly in some ways to let it affect you. And yet Saturday at 3 o'clock the last couple of weekends, I've been in absolutely horrendous form. I mean, just an absolute nightmare of a human being to be around. And is it right that we let it affect us that much? Is that a positive thing in our lives? Do we get all the benefit on the other side? I'd be interested to hear your thoughts.
I mean, it just shows you care, doesn't it, really? Like, I always think it's funny when I see people who, don't follow football or don't have that sport that they follow. I was thinking, there's nothing in life that you will therefore, get so invested in to the point where it will ruin your entire mood just because of 11 or, if it's a tennis player, 1 or whatever, cricket team, 11 again, but arbitrary people doing things that you have no control over, and
not
that
whatsoever.
Will.
And even, they don't seem to have much control over it. There's a whole other team involved and a million and one things, and yet we get so, I was so angry yesterday, and it's just so, I don't know that I used to get this angry. I don't know if that's just because we were really good before, but it's almost like when you fall into these traps of hoping it's better and expecting more, it's doubly as crushing when you come back to the realization that it's just the way it has been for a long while. Listeners, this is how this podcast is going to go, by the way. So if the first 2 minutes aren't your liking, it probably won't move beyond this.
I think it helps that I am fully convinced we're not fighting for anything. I think if we were in a title race, it was in March, and we were neck and neck, and we really needed this win, it would probably devastate my entire life for the whole weekend. But because it's so early in the season, because I really don't think we're going to win the league at any, I don't even think we'll really challenge. It doesn't maybe have that effect on me. But then, having said that, the last game against Everton, I really don't like playing Everton at home. It's just nightmares. But the 3-3 draw last year, I was seething after that, but mainly because of how we just threw that game away with that last
absolute
goal.
Context exactly of a game. So, you know, a last minute winner, a last minute, I mean, the penalty, you know, Bruno's penalty last week against Villa and all that kind of stuff. That's things that happen in a game specifically are mind-bending, absolutely. But God, I don't know. I was struggling yesterday. I feel slightly better about it today. And I'm, you know, the reason we are recording on Sunday afternoon is because absolutely no one had any will in the world to talk about this last night, without probably embarrassing ourselves on air with the crying that would have happened, I assume. But getting to the actual game, Imran, so quite pleasingly, I thought there was relatively wholesale changes. Obviously, we had a very different team, a very strong team midweek for Villarreal, which was an absolute scrape through as well. But then we had Ronaldo benched for the first time, which I'm sure people would have been somewhat pleased to see, and a few other changes. Were you happy with the team sheet? Were you upset? Did you think it was right or wrong?
I was happy because I've been a big proponent for Ole to use his squad more. I think we're in a position where we have a strong squad, so we should be rotating. If you look at City, you look at Chelsea, to an extent Liverpool, but not as much, I guess. They use their squad, they rotate because the season is long and you need to keep people fresh, and you can't just go for 11-11-11 every single week. And also the players who did come out, so Pogba wasn't great midweek, Ronaldo is 36, and for the last 20 minutes of the Villarreal game was basically a statue until he scored. So I was like happy, more than happy with people coming in. Maybe not to go into this too much now, but I think the issue comes where we make these changes, but because we don't have a quote unquote defined style, it's not like you fit in here and you know your job.
Yeah.
So it gets a bit, it takes a bit more longer for us to get used to it, maybe. For the players on the pitch to find their feet. Plus, when you have someone like Martial, who's not in the best vein of form, probably confidence low. Obviously, like he was quite slow starting the game, got his goal, which was good, but I mean, he wasn't all over the game. And you could you really expect Anthony Martial to just come into this game all guns blazing? Probably not.
I mean, I'm struggling to picture an all guns blazing Anthony Martial. It's been that long. I'm not saying it's never been the case. I'm sure someone can show me a YouTube clip of a match where he was blazing with all his weaponry. However, I'm struggling to recount that at the moment. However, it is kind of interesting. So I agree. I was really happy with the changes. I just think, for all the reasons you listed, but also from a motivational point, I think Ole's insistence on the same formation and the same 11 all the time is not good. And I'm not saying this in light of the Donny van der Beek chewing gum spit fiasco, but it is indicative of probably, you know, what is not a super happy bench, because there isn't always a lot of rotation and there isn't even always a lot of meaningful sub-minute times. In terms of late changes and stuff. So I also think from a motivational point, it's just really good to mix it up, you know, and I always thought that was the hallmark of Fergie's great teams, that he would put out an absolute joke first 11, like against Arsenal and all that kind of stuff. And yet in those times, you'll be like, I actually really think we're going to cruise to a win here, because all these players are going to be chomping at the bit, kind of show what they can do. It's going to be the complete opposite of what the other team's prepared for. So, you know, that's kind of going to throw them off. And I think that matters for a lot at the highest level in football. If you're completely disrupting someone's plans from the week. So I really like to see it, and I would like to see it more. So I was pleased that he did it. On the first half, I actually thought we were pretty good. You know, I thought it kind of worked to that effect. I thought the team looked very balanced. I thought we looked dangerous. I thought we looked really in control. And I also thought there was just a bit of a zip about our play. I thought we actually came out looking like every player wanted to go at them and dominate the game and kind of create, even though, you know, we didn't create a huge amount and we were very open, but I was quite pleased with the performance. I thought we were playing well, Imran.
I thought we were okay. I thought on the ball, there was a nice zip to our passing. The passing wasn't terrible for a change. And we looked a bit lively. We weren't creating left, right and centre, but we had a couple of chances created. Wan-Bissaka put in a nice cross, some good movement. I thought on the ball, we were pretty good. I just thought they could get in behind our midfield with such ease and onto our defence so easily in that first half that we might as well not have had a midfield. And to be fair, we probably don't have a midfield, let's be honest. But
well, exactly, yeah. And I think that's kind of the thing, is when you talk about United in a lot of recent games, it's almost like this Jekyll and Hyde. You have to talk about two different parts of our game, and not just, you know, attacking and defending, but us on the ball and us off the ball, and how we're trying to play are like totally at odds with each other, because we are our absolute own worst enemy. And you're absolutely right. It's very hard to kind of lump praise on us for, like, you know, having 71% possession, you know, keeping it really well, everyone moving it about very nicely and generally looking relatively threatening and keeping them penned in. It's very hard to praise that when any single time they do get the breakaway, it's ending with an absolute, you know, hold on to your pants moment in our box kind of thing, you know. So it's tricky. So the first half kind of went by. I think we just moved straight on to the goal and talk about Tony Martial. You know, really good goal, I thought.
Very good goal. Slight deflection, but I don't think that takes anything away from what he did. Got to hit it hard, got to put some power behind it, and you get that slight deflection, then bonus. Pickford might save it without deflection, might not. Who cares? It was a good goal. I did think he would score because I was so so adamant that he does not deserve to be starting. Like, yes, he scored, and that's great, but I still don't think he deserved to start the game based on what we've seen from him in his very, very many starts before this. And when you see someone like Lingard, who every time he's come on the pitch basically has affected it, once negatively, true, but mostly positively. And there was a lot of that talk as well from just United fans in general. And you know, when it's that sort of talk, then it's you're basically lining them up to score. And it was 100%. A very nice goal. McTominay, nice pass into Bruno, good touch, good turnout, nice into Martial. Like, sometimes when we score goals, we make it look like the most simple thing in the world. And you're just like, why can't we do this? Why can't you play that crisp pass in from midfield all the time?
Yeah.
And it's just because, our midfield can't play that crisp pass all the time.
Well, to be fair, I think it was Greenwood that played that first pass.
Was it Greenwood?
Not McTominay. Yeah, I think he was coming in off the right and just absolutely whipped it into Bruno his left.
Fair enough.
I could be mistaken.
That's probably why. But no, it probably was Greenwood.
Yeah, not to say that Fred McTominay didn't push the ball forward quite well in that first half, because I do think they did. I mean, Fred dropped a lovely ball on Cavani's head, which I had to go back and watch that to make sure I wasn't confused about that cross. But yeah, I think it was Greenwood. And again, a tiny point on him. Thought again he was really very good, although I don't think we're still getting the best out of him, but he's still developing. But I thought again his all-round play was really lovely, kind of beating three or four men and then switching the ball and stuff like that. He's class. I hope he stays at Manchester United and doesn't get fed up with this team. On Martial, I agree with you. I didn't necessarily think he deserved to start. However, Ole probably sees something in training that we don't. You know, if someone is training really well and seems to be in good form and stuff, then they probably do deserve a shout, even if we haven't seen it on the pitch recently. And also, I think Ole, like we know, is just super loyal to players and will give chances after chances to some people as opposed to other people, with not always a huge amount of rhyme or reason as to why. But I thought he was okay. It's interesting now that he just looks like a left winger again.
Yeah.
You know, he did seem to want to go at them, and he did seem to work okay with Shaw. I must know now he's not going to sniff at number nine really, unless it's some horrendous cup fixture.
There was two bits in the half that really stuck out for Martial. One was, I thought the goal, obviously, well, there's three bits. The goal was really good. Then there was the back post header, which he should have scored the header, but it was a nice run.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, at least if he's making that run, then great. And I'm happy.
We're happy he's there, you know, even though he absolutely should have scored the header.
But then there was another one where I think we had a corner and he got cleared out and it came back over to the right. And I think Bruno whipped, it might have been Bruno, I can't remember who it was, but someone whipped the ball right across the face of goal.
Yeah.
And it showed it from the side on. And literally, Martial just stood on the 18-yard box for the whole entire thing and just didn't move. And he's just thinking, that's where people get frustrated by, like, make a movement, do something. If he's gunning in at the back post, he scores that. So it's not that he can't do it, because he can do it, and we just saw it with that header, and we saw it with the goal as well. He's not the best at choosing his times, I guess.
It's very in and out, isn't it? And it always has been. You know, you don't really get that consistency of movement or effort or runs, you know, which is, you know, thing. But I was delighted to see him get the goal, and at halftime I was like, I was generally very happy. I thought we were moving the ball quite well. I totally take the point that we looked like an absolute leaky bucket still, but I just think that's the way Ole wants us to be, because he has other options. So, you know, he's saying, I don't think the risk of being this open is as bad as not having my attacking players on or whatever, you know, because there's no real need to keep doing it this way. He could play a three in midfield, he could play Matic more, you know, he could do other things to try and kind of solve this issue, but it seems like we're just seeing it week after week now.
Well, it was annoying, but at the same time, I thought all of our four defenders were generally having a good game in that first half. I thought Lindelof was actually really good.
Yeah.
Handled
Demarai Gray really well for the most part.
Yeah, and Varane looked good, and Wan-Bissaka looked decent. So I was generally like, they are getting in on us, but I think we're containing it mostly, although they did have some good chances. The problem is, though, if we're playing McTominay and Fred for what they give us, protection wise, not necessarily what they give us on the ball wise, but they're not giving us anything protection wise, then what is the point?
I mean, at that point, do you think you may as well just play Pogba and Van der Beek? I mean, would it be any different, really?
Exactly.
Would they let you down many times more? Maybe they would, and we're just not seeing it. And it's just difficult
to be fair, Fred was breaking up play a bit sometimes. But again, with Fred, everything is just sometimes.
Yeah, that is the Fred thing. But also, I think it's a positional thing. I think they're both capable of doing it. It's just that no one actually sits back. They both go all the time. Like, all our team goes, you know? So when we attack, and again, I can only think this is instructional at this point. You know, with the defenders we have, we are dominating the ball in a way that we really haven't under Ole as consistently. You know, 71% possession over the course of this game, and it looked that way. You know, there was times where Everton were just penned in for large swathes of that game. The big issues are, A, we're not actually creating the amount of quality chances that level of possession merits, because the teams are just quite content to sit in on us, and we don't necessarily have the relationships and patterns in a kind of new face attack to really exploit having that much ball in the final third. And also, anytime they break, then we are just absolutely in a harem scarum position, because Wan-Bissaka is probably pushed forward, Shaw's pushed forward, you know, Lindelof and Varane are on the halfway line, and Fred and McTominay are probably at the corners of the 18-yard box. So they can't even. You need someone to have the noose to sit, you know? And I just think either one of them probably could do a really good job at it, but they're both doing this kind of box to box, but more their box kind of role. And I just don't see how anyone thinks that's sustainable, you know, because we're going to consistently give away these quality chances, which someone will touch on later. But coming into the second half, I think 65th minute, just before our changes or just after our changes they scored?
Our changes were 57th minute.
Yeah, which, you know, probably should talk about that, which we will do the subs later on, because that is, I mean, Alex has some hilarious takes on that. But their goal, I mean, from our corner, this is, for me, is like Matic versus Istanbul, all these just calamitous joke goals that we seem to concede that I just don't think other teams concede.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you lay the blame for that goal?
Mainly Fred. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, but you have to deal with that. It's not even a 50-50. It's like a 70-30, 80-20 in his favour.
The first one's
basically 90-10 in his favour. The second one is about like 60-40 in his favour. He's got to deal with it both occasions. But if you don't deal with it, just foul the bloke. Like, have the nous to foul him. Like, it's not hard. If he's getting away from you and you're on a break, foul him. Drag him down. Like, it's nonsensical to me that professional footballer wouldn't think, I've got to foul this man. But we are a bit nice with these things.
We are.
We are too nice with these things. And it's,
And it consistently comes back to bite us. And it comes back to my point of no one kind of sitting. You know, Fred's this little dynamo that's always kind of a pace or two away kind of thing. He's always bumping into players. And as you say, it's all sometimes. You know, sometimes it goes for him, sometimes it goes against him. In this case, both times it went against him. And then everyone else who's expecting him to win both those challenges then suddenly has to react to a situation they didn't think they were found in. And I had a lot of sympathy for the backline, because whilst I do think Aaron Wan-Bissaka was terrible on the ball, I thought the backline defended pretty well. And like, Lindelof three or four times was matched up to Demarai Gray and absolutely, you know,
did
the sensible, really good defending, not committing himself. And to then be placed in the position we were put in by Fred, essentially, is such a letdown to him and Varane and the other players that are kind of doing their job. And it's just not good enough. And those individual howlers are in every single game, you know? And I just think, to come back again to that midfield pairing, neither of them, while I think they could be, neither of them are exhibiting the kind of responsibility you need to play in a team that is pushing everyone else on and is dominating the ball. You know, if you think of City and a Fernandinho or a Rodri, would they ever make that mistake and get bullied in that way? If you think of Liverpool and Fabinho sitting in there, or a James Milner or anyone else, would they let that happen? No, they wouldn't. If you think of Chelsea and Kante and anyone else, these are our competition. These were the players. I don't think Granit Xhaka would probably get away with that. Do you know what I mean? It's horrendous.
Granit Xhaka would probably like hold him down by his shot
in that situation. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So, you know, that's a different problem. But what I'm saying is, we just don't have a player, whether it could be Matic or whether he's too immobile, I just don't know what the reason is, but we do not have the player of that ilk that is going to say, I'm the person responsible, a Declan Rice, whoever it is, I'm the person responsible, I'm going to sit in, I'm going to let others go on, I'm going to read the danger, and if I can't deal with it fairly, I'm going to foul them. Like, and that's what you're not getting from either Fred McTominay, whether because they're too far up forward or because they just don't have it in them. Like, I just think that's so disappointing. What about anyone else in that goal? Do you think after that it's bust or...
Well, I think people say Wan-Bissaka maybe should come in, but I kind of have a bit of sympathy with Wan-Bissaka because Fred should deal with it, and you should trust your team. Like, if he goes over there, he could complicate matters, barge into Fred. Like, who knows what could happen? Yeah. So I can kind of see him stepping off. Also, if Fred does lose it, he probably does want to be in the position where he stepped off.
Yeah.
The other one was Shaw comes across, and he probably shouldn't because we had enough men back. We actually weren't. They didn't have a man extra.
The only issue with that is, and I do agree with Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I thought there was a point where when Damari Gray bumps Fred the second time, he's kind of still getting going. Yeah. And I thought at that point, Wan-Bissaka is only a couple yards from him, could just either foul him or tackle him.
Well, there were people saying that maybe the Villarreal challenge, not Villarreal, Young Boys challenge was playing on his mind, maybe.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. But, you know, equally at that point, I think he's just... You're asking him there to completely fix Fred's mistake, and I just think that's harsh. You know, on the Shaw one, when Shaw's like in our half and running back, but then when Damari Gray gets away from Fred, it looks like Gray can run straight through, and it's only Lindelof beside him. And I think Shaw thinks Damari Gray will just run away from them, so I'm the one who has the speed and have to come across. So I even think he's kind of okay. I think it's that position where once Fred, you know, drops the clanger, everyone is just in a bad spot trying to react to that. And I don't necessarily think he can say, oh, he should have held his position when the threat looked like Gray, you know, outstripping Lindelof and going through on goal or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So, but an absolute sucker punch to kind of deal with. And again, it just seems like if we can't get that second goal, we are just waiting on that at the moment, you know?
We do resort to panic stations a bit in these situations. That worries me a bit because we saw it against Newcastle as well. Like, it becomes a bit panic stations and no one's got that composed head. But is that easy for me to say, sat here, when you've got, you know, Fred loses the ball and you've got a 3-on-3 attack? Maybe, yeah. But it does happen a lot with us, especially that Newcastle game, that happened a lot.
The Wolves game, and something we'll touch on later with a little bit of discussion on how we're currently doing XG-wise this year. But, you know, that's what I'm kind of saying. It's happened enough now for someone to say, we can't really allow this because we're clearly not, you know, I don't know if the plan is, oh, our back four is so good that we should just be able to deal with these one-on-one situations, kind of like how Liverpool sort of rely on Van Dijk just to mop up a lot of kind of dicey one-on-one situations. I just don't think we'll get away with that with our current clientele, and I just think you're always running the risk of giving them high quality chances versus us struggling to create chances despite having all the ball. And I can't imagine how someone's looking at it and thinking, you know, this is a sustainable way to challenge, you know, or really be at the top level in the Premier League. I think it's kind of mad. So after that, then we had the subs before. He brought Ronaldo and Sancho on for Cavani and Martial, I think.
Yep.
And he then, in response to the goal, brought Pogba on for Fred.
Yep.
Yeah. What do you make of those subs? Because there's some interesting bits in there.
I mean, the Martial one was an injury.
Yeah.
So fair enough. Injured player, bring on Sancho. And I actually thought Sancho probably looked his brightest that he's ever looked for us. So
definitely
far.
Thought he came on, looked really good. Yep.
Yep. I just think it's hilarious that Ole, a man who refuses to sub anyone before 70 minutes, when Ronaldo sat next to him, has to bring him on before 60. Like, he can't help himself.
And when have we seen that ever in Ole's tenure in a game of consequence? I'm not talking, you know, maybe he did it in the Europa League in a nothing game to bring the boys on kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
He doesn't do it when we're playing badly. So when we're in control of a game to do it is quite astonishing. And it's worrying because it means, therefore, he is managing what? Ronaldo, the essence of Ronaldo, the presence of Ronaldo, and he's not sticking to his usual managerial instincts tell him. Because that's not Ole. I think we all know that's not Ole. To bring someone on 57 minutes for someone else who is having a fairly decent game in Cavani.
Yeah, I thought that my whole thing about the first half was I just thought we looked like a more balanced team, and this kind of comes on to a wider point around Ronaldo's worth, which I don't think is as easy. A lot of people are just straight away saying he's statuesque, he does nothing for you in the build-up, this will be a disaster. Even if he scores goal, it's not worth the way he'll make you play. And I don't buy into that just yet, particularly if he's at number nine. If he's in left wing, I could understand it a little bit more. But I thought Cavani was good. I mean, did you think Cavani was struggling? Do we think there's a fitness issue there, given he hasn't played, in fairness? Is that what it was, and it's as simple as that? Or, I mean, I can climb to agree with you. I think if it's not Ronaldo sat on the bench, there's no one else he's bringing on for Cavani there.
I don't think he was struggling. I mean, I could see him coming off at like 70, maybe. He was, I don't think he was blowing by 57 minutes. What, 10 minutes after second half? I don't. Yeah, Cavani's not going to be blowing at that point. And I thought he was all right. Like, he wasn't. I mean, he had that headed chance in the first half for some good movement. He was doing his usual Cavani hustle and bustle. And it was like we were pressing it fairly decently at times. And at points, he was even like dropping back. I think at one point, he picked the ball up at right back and was just sprinting around from right back. Yeah. And it's like, okay, Cavani, you do that.
Do what you like, yeah.
Yeah, so just giving it a bit more. Our play looked a bit more dynamic with him on the pitch, is what I would say.
And I mean, I suppose if we, like, you know, if as you say, Sancho, I thought looked lively. There was a bit where Ole Sancho was, it was shortly after he came on, and the speakers picked up Ole saying, Jaden, stay wide and take him on, like shouting at him to do that, which I quite liked because you don't really see that very often. And as basic as that instruction is, it was good to hear because you don't really hear that often from Ole. And he did it after that, and he skinned his man, you know, four or five times, looked pretty threatening, created good chances for Ronaldo and Pogba on the edge of the box and stuff like that. So it's probably as encouraging as we've seen from him, which is really good. Real shame none of it translated into a goal or an assist or anything to help us over the line and to kind of make him feel better, I suppose. But you know, maybe Ole was just thinking, you know, this game's, we need this second goal because we are open. Bringing on Ronaldo and Sancho, why wouldn't you want to bring on those players? Obviously, they're both incredible. And if we score a goal and one of them is involved or whatever, you know, it's, well, that's you know, what an arsenal we have to bring on and what a great opportunity Ole took there, kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? So it can go both ways. The Pogba substitution is kind of more the same, but possibly even worse, if you know what I mean, because we just looked a bit, I thought really all the impetus went out of the game after that.
Pogba was Pogba, I guess. A bit slow on the ball. I don't know, I just don't really like Pogba in a midfield too, but then I understand why we might need to play him there, because you think, okay, we need to move forward a bit. You want to get the ball to Pogba and he can like start dictating play. But when he doesn't do that, it's just kind of like holding us up. And you're just kind of waiting for him to like grab the game and start dictating it. But just when it just doesn't happen. And then you're just kind of like, well, nothing's happening here. Literally nothing is happening.
A fair amount of glory ball as well, sometimes I find, which we already kind of have with Bruno sometimes. And you know, I said it a couple weeks ago, it'll be really interesting when Rashford comes back, because Pogba does not fit in that front four when Rashford comes back, I don't think. If Sancho's going to, you know, get better and better, we have Ronaldo and Cavani. Greenwood's been a nailed-on starter for the last little while. Whether he'll continue to be, I'm not sure. But there's no place for him. And then you look at what our midfield two is going to be. If it's going to be a two for me, if you're playing Pogba, it has to be a three. But then where do you play Bruno? You can't play Pogba and Bruno in midfield, you know, and just have one sitting holding defender that we don't currently have at the club. You know, like, to me, there's just a big... I could see a world where it goes kind of bad to worse in this situation, because I think that's very difficult to navigate for Ole, particularly if he's going to stay rigid to the 4-2-3-1. I just don't understand who's going to lose out. I assume it'll be one of Fred or McTominay, which might not make us very much better at all.
Well, it might not make us worse.
As hard as that is, I know it's probably won't make much of a difference, is probably what I'm saying. But, you know, it doesn't just seem to fit at the moment. There's just an imbalance there, you know?
I think this could be the start of Ole. Maybe, yeah, Pogba won't play 1 week, we'll play 1 week, Rashford won't play 1 week, 1 week, and just lots of changing. But again, and I said it before, it's just, do we have a defined system and structure in place, though, that when someone comes in for someone, they know exactly what they're doing? I'm not sure.
We don't.
Well, yeah, we don't. And that is a worry. Like you mentioned, like Fergie would change his team all the time. But Fergie made sure that every single person in the squad, A, knew their value to the squad, knew their role in the team, and knew exactly what they were doing. And so it didn't matter that we changed the team. We very rarely had like the same lineup game to game.
Yeah.
And that was fine because Fergie made sure that everyone knew exactly what their place was in this squad. There are currently like several players in our squad now who I don't think, if you ask them honestly, what is your place in this Man United team, they wouldn't have a clue what their place is. Chief of them being obviously Donny van de Beek,
the man. Yeah,
but
it's tough. And you know, I'm remiss to say just, oh, when Fergie did this and when Fergie did that, it was different. And obviously, there was lots of poor performances under Fergie that we don't remember and stuff like that. And that's fine. But it is, I think, it is a fair criticism. I think
because Ole constantly brings it up himself.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, yeah, he does. Just on Van der Beek there, Ole had some choice words in, I think it was the pre-Everton press conference, or it might have been post.
No, it was pre-Everton.
where he said, you know, we can't have any sulkers, anything like that. But Donnie's not, you know, we're not at that stage kind of thing. He's still good in the changing room. There's obviously rumors that he's now actively seeking a move in January. What's are you clamoring to see him? Do you think he just doesn't fit? Do you think, you know, he hasn't earned it via merit? I mean, what's the thought on that?
I mean, I don't understand how he would possibly earn it. Has Van der Beek ever started two games in a row for us? If he has, it was very early last season, and I can't remember.
Might have been preseason.
And it certainly wasn't in one of those central midfield roles. I just, how can anyone say, oh, he's not earned his chance? He's not taken, like, he's barely got any. Like, and we go, other people get chance after chance after chance, and then other people just don't. And Van der Beek just really hasn't. What, you throw someone in for one game and say, right, impress me now, and maybe you'll get a chance. Like, that's, come on, no one can play like that.
Do you think it's a bravery thing from Ole in terms of this McFred comfort blanket? Do you know, known quantity, we've had big performances, PSG, etc. You know, when we were the plucky underdog away to City and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like we're maintaining with this idea of what they give you, even though now we're playing a completely different kind of football with much less pressing from the front, much more quality offense, much more quality at the back, which means we're holding the ball much better. So our possession is much higher, much higher, much higher.
Yeah.
And the kind of games where they excelled and kind of won those places now seem to exist less and less and less. In fact, they don't ever exist.
I mean, weren't there times last season when we play teams of like the Villa, Brighton, Everton ilk, but our possession was like around 50%?
Yeah, equal. Yeah, getting equal, and that suited us because we wanted that kind of basketball game style where we were able to create. You know, but we're not doing that anymore.
Well, we're not that team anymore, but yet we're still playing with the midfielders who are probably better off the ball midfielders than on the ball midfielders, which makes not a lot of sense. And to
your point earlier, they're not doing the off the ball work that we actually specifically need from them in this context.
Yeah.
I.e. not just buzz around all over the pitch, but just actually stand in that one place and take the ball off whoever's breaking. Do you know what I mean? Is it a big ask? Is that an alien concept to our squad? Because to me, it's like a really, you know, since about Claude Makélélé started playing in the Premier League, I feel like it's been a pretty well-established role in most quality teams. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why we think we can do without it.
Well, I they're not really giving us it, ultimately. And I don't see why we can't try Van der Beek, because, I mean, it literally can't be worse. It can't be.
Yeah.
Like, okay, mate, yeah, yes, it can technically, but I mean, we might as well try, because at least he might give us something a bit more on the ball. And I mean, if I'm him and Fred is starting ahead of me in the next game, I would be devastated, because if Van der Beek could make that mistake yesterday that Fred made, I don't think he'd start for another 5 months. So it's, but again, it,
yeah,
goes,
you raised that point last night, and I thought it was just a way I hadn't thought about it, but it's absolutely bang on. I mean, if not only that, he would be vilified, and I, you know, there would be people just coming out to say, oh, exactly, he's not a, you know, he's not a defensive player.
Yeah,
he doesn't do the things you need him to do. And yet we witness, and I don't want to just bang on, even though we absolutely are doing it, about Fred McTominay all game round, because, you know, they do good things, but again, you get the same things over and over, the same mistakes, the same inconsistencies, the same absences from areas of the pitch over and over and over again, to the point where, as you say, even if you were to try the more attacking lineup or the more risky lineup, quote unquote, could it actually be worse, or would it just be kind of more of the same?
Yeah, because it's not like we've got this big defensive shield and no one's ever, like, Varane's not doing anything. Varane literally yesterday was running around like a crazy person at times.
And
so,
he was good. He was so good.
Yeah, he was really good.
I'm so sad. He deserves so much better. He should be, he looks like he's been here all his life. He's leading the team. He's assured. De Gea is playing amazingly, Imran. Unbelievably well. And we're letting these people down. It just says it all, that when De Gea finally gets his act together and gets back to absolute top class best keeper in the world form, which is where he literally currently is at, and everyone who listens to the podcast will know it's not, you know, trifling for me to say that. And yet when he does that, we've got this other big massive issue in our team. We it just seems like we can never bring all these parts together at the same time.
I tell you, Varane's going to age about 15 years in this next 6 months.
He is very youthful looking, to be fair, but yeah,
he's going to be a wary old man by the end of this season.
Yeah. And it's a shame, you know, and it's a shame for Lindelof, who's come in and done very well in Maguire's injury and stuff. So it's just, I think that's where all the anger, the extra anger and the frustration and the the effect of mental health comes into it as well, is that you just hope for better at the moment, you know?
Well, I mean, the really frustrating thing for me, though, there was zero response to the goal. Like, really. We did nothing after they scored.
Well, Ronaldo waves his arms.
Well, Ronaldo, Pogba had that header, which I don't... People say, yeah, he probably should have done better.
He's a terrible header of the ball.
But yeah, he saw it late, and yeah, I mean...
For someone who gets up so well and is so blessed, you know, physically, he's not a good header of the ball. The amount of headers he puts straight at the keeper over the bar that when he's in position to header them well, that one, I agree, he's kind of moving backwards, difficult.
You wonder what a game of head tennis between him and Maguire looks like.
Yeah, we had 10 corners yesterday, Imran, and the best chance we created from them was the goal we conceded. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just, and they weren't like bad corners either. Like, I'm sure if other teams got that quantity of corners, they would be creating chances. It's
they would have taken him against us.
Well, they absolutely would. Yeah, they nearly won the game. Mm. Arguably, should have won the game with a Tom Davies howler or masterpiece.
That won't irritate me because the best chance for after they scored was for them, and we just did nothing, and that was a big frustration, as I said. But yeah,
well, Imran, to be true, the best chances throughout the game were for them.
Yeah, that's also
not
true,
inconsistent.
Tom Davies, I am totally fine with him squaring that ball if I'm an Everton fan.
So am I,
because I want us to do that more. I love
it's very City.
Yeah. People, I think when people on FIFA, I think there's like when people pass it to, I don't know, I don't play FIFA anymore, but there's a like, people think it's a cheat goal or something if you pass it across to the guy with an open goal. But that is what I want. I would love it if people are going through, pass it to the guy with an open net, score, boom. That's a guaranteed goal. So I have no problem.
We had Ronaldo and Greenwood against Villa last week, wasn't it? Where, out of 10 times.
Yeah, Greenwood and Villa? Bruno. Greenwood should have squared to Bruno, yeah.
Yes, yes. But it was Ronaldo and Greenwood the week before.
Yes,
which
was
why we thought maybe Greenwood didn't do it this time. It's infectious.
Yeah, that's correct.
But I agree. And I thought it was a nice little ball. I thought it was a good decision. Yep. It looks like such an easy chance for Tom Davies, and he probably does score half the time. But De Gea's coming out making himself big. I thought it was quite clever. And it just absolute luck from us, because Aaron Wan-Bissaka played everyone onside.
And Mina should not be offside. He shouldn't be, ultimately.
No, he shouldn't be. It's only just because Lindelof's a wee bit slow, and that's the best thing in the end, because he can't really get back to him, and he's like, I mean, literally a foot over.
Yeah, but he can see everything. He doesn't even have to be. He doesn't have to be in front of the ball. He doesn't have to be in front of Tom Davies for like. There's offsides where you have to kind of be on the edge of offside to make the chance, and then there's offsides where you could be.
Yeah.
A yard
but then
back
is he expecting the ball? Do you know what I mean?
Well, he's running, making that run.
He is making the run. Yeah.
So even if you're expecting the keeper to parry, it'd still be offside. So
I enjoyed that he did a 4-minute dance segment
He knew he was offside. I think you don't do that dance.
Why would he commit so much to the celebration? He did about 3 different celebrations. He did the thumb suck, new baby arrival. He then did a dance, and they seemed to have a moment in front of their away fans. And then it was brought back. So
it's funny that currently all our games, there is something happening in the last minute of them. I don't know what that says, but literally, I think going back now,
I mean, I was
to the West Ham, every game pretty much.
Yeah, and I was sitting watching this, and I was literally like, I'm sick of last minute winners. See, if we get a last minute winner here, I will not be happy. I will not let myself be happy about that.
Come on now, Cole. You would have been going mental.
I wouldn't in the moment, but I was like making a mental note. Don't be fooled by this when we score our last minute winner. It's not a good thing. We have not done well here. It
constantly happens at the moment. It's funny though, because in an alternative world, in a weird alternative world, we draw against West Ham. We don't get that last minute goal against Villarreal.
Yeah.
But Bruno scores a last minute penalty. And then what? We're living in a world of draws then. And it's just.
Yeah, probably on the exact same points total. But yeah,
it's just like these very fine margins that our games currently exist on the finest of margins.
And do you know what? That's because we're not in control of our games, in the sense that, yes, we're dominating the ball, but we're leaving ourselves so open to chaos at the other side that it's just, we just have. And also, I just think there is a problem with chance creation, clearly.
Greenwood fizzes one. That's a good ball. Bruno Fernandes, Martial, big opportunity here. 1-0 to Manchester United. Superb goal, finished by Anthony Martial.
Hello, listener, and thank you for listening to this week's episode of United R. We hugely appreciate it. If you would like even more of our appreciation, please consider giving us a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you happen to get your podcasts from. Also, a quick shout out for the champions of below the waist grooming that are here to save your balls. You heard right. The podcast sponsor Manscaped, the best of the best and world champion of men's grooming, are here so you can stay clean and take care of yourself where it matters most. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide, so join the movement for all your below-the-waist grooming needs with the code UNITEDR at manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping on your first order.
Towards Pogba, claiming a hand there. But that is it, time is up. It's a really good comeback by Everton in the second half to snatch a point after Manchester United had led.
If you took all of our games this year and took the XG, we should have lost to Everton, Villa, Wolves, Villarreal by a country mile, and Young Boys, admittedly with a red card, but it wasn't looking good before that either. You know, that's half the games we've played this year, and we should have lost them all. The ones we won, not even some of them, very close, you know, in terms of that. And yet we've dominated a lot of those games from a possession perspective and being the bigger, better team. And for me, that is hugely, hugely concerning, because we all think we should be a few points ahead of ourselves and we've done really poorly in what was an easy stretch of games. The XG says we should have done even worse than what we're currently, the current level. We're outperforming our XG and we're still not anywhere near happy with where we are. That just shows there's something not working here.
I mean, it's not working. It doesn't look right. Our defence are too busy. Our De Gea is too busy, which is probably a lot of people saying that's the reason he's looking so good, is he's not been this busy for a while, and therefore when De Gea is a busy keeper, he's a good keeper. I'd probably go along with that theory as well. It's mad. And the big thing there is, fine, I'll take all this XG against us. If we were creating lots of chances,
yeah,
and if we were our sustained bits of pressure,
if it was 3-3 XG every time kind of thing, and we were losing good chances because we were making so many good chances, and every game was like 4-1, 4-2, whatever, that'd be great. Our XG quite often has been under 1.
Mm. But you would take a 3-3 XG because with our strike power and the quality of players we have, you would expect us to score more of our chances, which would make sense then because of inferior opponents. But we're not doing that. We are barely creating anything. And anything we do, like when was the last bad miss that we had? Like really, a bit Marshall in this game, I guess. But even that's a header at the back post.
Talking about the header? Yeah, I wouldn't really count that. When was the last time someone was through on goal and just missed it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it doesn't really happen.
That happened all season. I swear that happened loads last season. But this side, it's just not happening. We're just not creating these chances.
It's interesting because this year we're dominating the ball so much more, but we don't necessarily have the ingenuity and the partnerships, I think, to unlock defences that are sat in, and then what we're doing is slinging in crosses to either Cavani or Ronaldo, but the quality of cross is not ideal, and also everyone else around those two players is pretty static, so we're not actually getting, you know, any kind of second ball situations there or anything else, you know, or causing any big problems. And I just think, again, it's unfortunate for Ole, but it's hard not to let the buck stop with him. But you know, in his 3 years, whatever, we've probably seen three completely different teams, both in terms of people and style, you know, if you can say that one exists. And again, now it seems like this year, we're not playing exactly how we played yesterday, despite playing the exact same formation. Things have changed a little bit. I appreciate there's new attackers in that lineup and stuff like that. There's a few injuries. Rashford's not been there. Sancho's not started great. We're relying very heavily on Greenwood. Ronaldo's just back in the league, blah, blah, blah. But I just think there should be better chance creation there. And I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, an over-reliance on individual talent to rescue us from bad situations. And then when that dries up or when that isn't just happening, there's no system in place to kind of carry you through. And I think that's so evident that in your difficult games, what gets you through is the tried and tested. This is how we create chances. This is how we get at teams. This is how we make them feel uncomfortable. And at the moment, it's just like, give it to Bruno, give it to Pogba, hope for the best. And that's just all there is, you know, and that's, you know, it's very, very difficult to watch sometimes.
It's just not sustained. Like, we don't have, I think there's one time against Southampton, I think it was either late first half or the second half, where we properly pinned them in, like properly. They couldn't get out and we would really pin them in. Other than that, I can't remember really a time this season where we've really we've been so on top of a team when it's been 0-0 or 1-1 or whatever that they just cannot get out.
I thought those points yesterday where Everton were really, you know, just hoofing it from the edge of their box and stuff
They were set up in a way that they had their four, and the other two banks of four.
That's the difference. So they just never felt under pressure.
Waiting for their counter attacks. That was their whole game plan, was their counter attacks with Damari Gray. So they were kind of, yeah, that's what they were kind of doing. And but they didn't. They were hoofing it clear, but not to the point where like there were panic stations, harem scarem.
Would you swap Fred McTominay for Allen and Doucouré?
Probably.
So would I.
Doucouré was excellent yesterday, I have to say.
He is excellent. He probably should have went to a better team. He was excellent for Watford in the Premier League.
Didn't he? Like, he kind of fell off a bit, didn't he, at first or something? And people were thinking maybe not. I remember at Watford I used to really like him. But yesterday he looked every bit that player, like big, strong,
yeah,
good in the back.
Constantly there in the minutes. Yeah. Just in all the kind of big moments he was there and obviously got the assist. You know,
isn't this the issue? We constantly come up against these teams who aren't on our level, who have a better midfield pairing than us. You could argue West Ham had a better big midfield pairing than us. You could argue Villa had a better midfield pairing, or at least on the same level. Like, it's not like we have. Even if you are the biggest Fred McTominay fan in the world, Nick, if you are the biggest fan, you cannot, unless you are their parents, you cannot say to me, our midfield is so far ahead.
And do you know what? I think in a midfield three, both of them occasionally as squad players are valuable. I do think they're good enough to be a Manchester United.
I'm not advocating getting rid of them all. Like, they should never play for United. They are decent players.
Yeah.
But it's not exactly the level that we want to be at. And it's certainly not the level of who we want to be our nearest rivals.
No, probably not. Do you think this result puts pressure on Ole going into the international week? And what's your personal? Because this, you know, I mean, we get this every week now, and we've kind of been bitten before. I mean, I've before on this podcast said I think I'm Ole out, and we've then gone on a great run and stuff like that. Again, it just feels like we have a patch of good games, a patch of bad games, a patch of good games, a patch of bad games. And I just don't think that's befitting of a top team or certainly a team on paper that is as good as we are. And you have to wonder again, and there'll be some people thinking, oh, these are all just the classic kind of things people always say that don't mean anything. But I just still think if there was a system behind all the individual quality, that would carry you through a lot of these difficult moments and games when you're just not at the peak of your powers. You know, like the Villa game for me, Chelsea went and played Villa, had a very similar experience, very difficult game, very difficult first half. And they ended up winning 3-0. They weren't great, and they just made their chances, took them, and were resolute defensively. And I know, like, everyone is crazy for Tuchel at the moment and Chelsea, and they might not turn out to be that great. But again, I just can't get away from this feeling that is this the limit that we're going to get to, you know, or is there growth here and we just need one more player and he just wasn't given that midfielder in the summer window or whatever it is, you know? What I mean, do you think there's a genuine pressure on him, or is it just us fans kind of being fed up and doing the thing we do where we go from one end to the other every couple of weeks?
I don't think there's a pressure on him. I don't think the club are even entertaining the idea of removing him. I think it is just fan-led, but while I understand that fan-led, I don't think the club are even in the realms of looking to get rid of him, especially so early in the season after spending however much money in the summer. Even if we didn't buy a defensive midfielder, we still brought in a lot of players. I don't see the club going anywhere.
Do you think without him? Do you think there's an overreaction from fans at the start of the window? I mean, if you look at it, you know, we're okay now in the Champions League. Yes, we went out of the Carabao Cup. No one really cares, and we're sitting around fourth. Very, I mean, what are we, 2-3 points behind Chelsea, who are top? Is it really that big? You know, is there any need to be panicking? Is it a what we're seeing means more than those numbers kind of thing? You know, like, do you think it's valid?
I think it's valid. I think it's hard to not watch these games, these last couple of games especially, and not take stock of where we are as a club and what Ole is doing in charge. Especially when you see like how our competitors are doing and if they've got their shit together and we haven't. It's gonna make an effect. And ultimately, like I said, we are living on such fine margins of all this stuff. We were, what, a minute away from having 2 points in the Champions League and having a really tough-looking couple of games ahead.
Yeah.
We could be top of the league right now. We could be ninth. Like, it's just all over the place. And, I mean, for me, my belief is we will never win anything major with Ole in charge. That is just what I think. That is, like, if you gun to my head, do you think Ole will win anything major at Man United? I think no. At which point should I want him to be manager of Man United? Probably not. But I just have so much apathy towards. Like, I know the club won't replace him, so why waste energy? Like
thinking about it.
Yeah. Why waste my energy thinking about something that won't happen? Which isn't really, again, we go back to mental health. Not the most wonderful attitude to have.
Doesn't sound healthy. I mean, I don't disagree. And
also, does he not deserve a chance? Because, you know, he did finish the season quite... We did come second, got to a final. Yes, we didn't win, but maybe he deserves a chance because of that. Yeah. And he probably does deserve a chance because of that. But, I mean, again, I personally do not think he will seize that chance. So,
yeah, and I do think there's a decent amount of evidence to suggest that's not an outlandish opinion, both in terms of our semi-final issues, our cup issues, early exits from Champions League before and all that kind of stuff, as well as the kind of Jekyll and Hyde league performances where we do really well for 20 games and then do awfully for 10 games and all that kind of stuff, which is just not what you need in this day and age when you're playing against the likes of 90-point City, you know, Chelsea and Liverpool, which is a high bar, don't get me wrong. You know, we look at the treble season and what United points total, I think they finished with like 70 something, was it even?
80.
Yeah, you know, it's just a different kind of thing now. But I do agree with you. I think there's just things there that I think now, we're 3 years in, I would want to not be seeing the same issues over and over and over again. And if the thing is that he buys well and there's a good aura in the club and he has done a bit of a reset, which I totally agree with, and that's fine. If there's a limit to that, then we need to know when we're at the limit and we need to make sure the next person is going to drive us on. Whoever that is, that's another very difficult question that I don't even want to get into because you're basically talking about Ole after when he's still here and he is going to be here, as you continue to say. But I do just think you have to see the progress, and it can't just be, oh, we just have to go out and buy the best center defensive midfielder in the world and then suddenly it'll all be grand. Because what if it's not? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just not really good enough. It might get worse before it gets better. The next six games, Imran, I don't have them to hand, but they're something like Leicester, Atalanta, Liverpool, Atalanta, City, Watford, and someone else. It's Spurs maybe. Yeah, it's not. See if I got those correct, by the way.
To do it officially, our next game is Leicester away, Atlanta at home, Liverpool at home, Spurs away, Atlanta away, City at home. So that is a massive run.
It's massive, isn't it? It's a big October. But you know, are we going to do better in those games? Because we kind of do better in big games, or do we not do that anymore because we're not actually that counter punching team anymore? Do you know what I mean?
I mean, isn't this is Man United in 2021? Literally, anything can happen in any game. Yeah. If you ask me what is Man United now, it is anything. Anything could happen. Yeah. We could go to Leicester next week and we could win 5-0. We could go to Leicester next week and we could lose 2-0. We could draw. We could score 3 goals in the last minute. Literally anything could happen in our games because that is the team we are. There's no... I don't even know what to expect, really. You would expect us maybe to give City a good game because we always do, but then maybe City, you know, City looking good. Who knows? Liverpool beat us at Old Trafford last season. I feel like they beat us the season before as well. I get, who knows? It's impossible. Yeah. All I'll know is we will definitely win one of the big games because that's the kind of thing we do. We'll also probably lose one of the games to Atlanta because that's also one of the things we do.
Oh, I was going to say, it sounds bad at this point, but I almost kind of care more now about the Champions League just because of the position we've put ourselves in that group than I necessarily do about the league. I think those big games against, you know, the likes of your Liverpools and Cities, less so Spurs, probably more so at Leicester than Spurs, really, but they're always impossible to predict. You just literally, like, they come down to fine margins. As you say, it could be a complete blowout, could be absolutely tight. I would fancy them to be quite tight and us to be quite defensive, which might not go super well for us, but you just never know what's going to happen in those games. The Atlanta games are actually the ones I kind of care most about. I want to see us really have a punch in the Champions League because I don't know, I'm already at that point where I'm kind of waving goodbye to the Premier League as a reasonable expectation like that.
That's already done for me. We are not a consistent team. And to win the league, you've got to be a consistent team.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, top four. And I don't necessarily think, you know, it looks like other teams might be quite patchy as well. So I don't think top four will be like, you know, horrendously unachievable, even if we're kind of here and there, you know. But God, it's depressing, isn't it?
I mean, that's following United.
the revised expectations versus 8 weeks ago. But yeah, I'm kind of more interested in those Atlanta games just because I just have more hope for that competition now, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta will be a good game as well. They're quite...
quite open, quite... Yeah,
make it a bit of a basketball game, which we might enjoy, depending how they approach that game. But the question I have is What run of results do you think? Do you think there's a run of results that could see Ole come under pressure? Is it six losses?
Yeah, I mean, six losses, I think, would be very difficult to... I mean, that would also possibly have us out of the Champions League. So I do think if the Manchester United manager loses six games in a row, having previously underwhelmed, regardless of who they are and what they've done, I'm pretty sure Fergie would be in bother at that point. Do you know what I mean? I don't even think it would quite take that much. I do think there's maybe a conversation to be had around Christmas, depending on how we go, either up or down in this current trajectory. But I think what will happen is we'll just have good results and bad results. And that will always mean that he's kind of, just keep him. Because, you know, there was that good game a week or two ago. But then there was those two awful ones. Then there was four or five really good ones. And then there was a couple of awful ones. But you can always reach back to when we did okay kind of thing, you know. So It's very difficult then to have that consistent run. Plus with our team, Imran, you know, all coaching aside, that team should go out and beat teams, you know.
Oh, easily.
Like, it shouldn't really take. It should take fine-tuning. It shouldn't take, you know, absolute the motivational powers of whoever, you know. If you could pick everyone's fit, who's your starting 11 and formation?
Which game? Next game? Just in general?
Any game.
Back four pretty much picks itself.
Yeah.
It's impossible with this midfield too, honestly. If you're going to play City away, then yeah, probably would go for Fred and McTominay. If we are playing Villa at home, like we just did, I probably would go for Van der Beek, because why not? I don't know what he could do. Let's try it out. Van der Beek and McTominay, why not? Van der Beek and Matic, why? Literally, that midfield too, I'd probably throw them onto a bag. Just pick out two names and then that can go. Because literally, I imagine the same thing will happen regardless. But maybe if you've got Matic, you might have better on the ball, but you probably have less legs. Van der Beek, better on the ball, not so good defensively. McTominay and Fred. Pogba. Like, it just doesn't matter. And then, I'm interested to see what happens with Rashford. I personally think Rashford's an excellent left winger when fully fit. And as long as we don't rush him back, I would like to see him on the left wing, Sancho on the right. And then, yeah, you got to put Ronaldo up top. But honestly, I would love to see Greenwood up top at some point with those two around him. I think that could be quite tasty, but... You're not going to obviously not play Ronaldo.
No, we've made our bed now with Ronaldo.
We've made our Ronaldo bed, and we have to lie with Ronaldo in that bed, in his Ronaldo boxer shorts.
I saw that. Did you see that when he took his top off the other day?
Got to get that opportunity for branding.
I don't know why I'm surprised. But
I'm surprised there isn't a tattoo of his face on the back of his on his back.
Well, listen, Imran, I feel better after that chat.
I'm glad someone did. Everyone remember, look after your mental health.
If United's really annoying you, you know, what I did, I went out for a walk because I was just, for an hour or two, I was just in the house and I was just like angry. I was angry at my four-month-year-old child more than usual.
Well, it was their fault, so.
Yeah, and then I just thought, you know what, I have to shake this up, have to do something. Went out for a walk, had a bit of a laugh at myself, felt the world better until I thought about it again.
If you take anything away from this podcast, what we're telling you is, you know, don't let it get you too down.
Don't let it upset you too much. And do you know what? It'll probably get better. Oh, a little bit.
We hope so. I mean, Leicester are in a bad patch of form. I think didn't they just draw 2-2 today after being 2-0 up?
Oh, I thought it was 2-1, so that's news to me.
No, but... Jeffrey Schlupp came off the bench and scored.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's how it ended.
Here, what about Brentford?
Whew. What happened to Brentford? I don't know.
They beat West Ham 2-1.
Bloody hell. There you go. Two away as well, that, wasn't it?
Do you know that a week or two ago, the two teams with the best XG in the league were City and Brentford across all their games? That game against Liverpool, Brentford had an XG of over 4 to Liverpool's 3. Very impressive. Very impressive.
I mean, I'm quite glad we don't have them coming up, because you could see that as a game that we'd struggle
with. Do an absolute number on us. Yeah, but anyway.
I just want to say, Leicester, probably a good time to play them, so you would hope that we can bounce back with a win against that, especially with the tough games we've got coming up after it.
Also after the international break, so, you know, refreshed and revitalised. I kind of always expect us to beat Leicester, but Yuri Tielemans to play really well and make me continue to wish we had a bottle.
I think we've got a decent record at that ground ever since the 5-3 nightmare. I think we've got a decent record there. So, yeah, hopefully the lads will pull one out.
But yeah, I doubt we will be back in between times due to the class international break coming 2 weeks after the last one, but most likely immediately after Leicester or your fix of United R. Thank you, folks.
Cheers.
Podcast Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.